Before branches are going to fall on the leaves.
Okay, welcome everyone. We'll go ahead and get started with public outreach and legislative committee meeting. Before we start, I have a couple of announcements. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience, the public members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when announced the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. Public that are attending in person, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return to the to Ms. King to help expedite public comments. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to SCB voter website. At this time, all committee members are present. And we will go ahead and move with a Pledge of Allegiance. And Director Kelly, would you please...
Hand over your heart or salute if you're military. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, John.
Okay, well, we'll move to item number two, public comment. Are there any comments from the public? Any comments? All right. We'll move on to item three. We'll start with item 3.2. This is a legislative consultant report by California Advocates. Mr. Albiano.
Yes, thank you very much. I apologize. I'm outside a water natural resource meeting here in Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. So I'm having to use my phone because it went late. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And I believe Anna Lee and Anthony are on as well. And thank you for Jeff and the board for allowing us to go early because like I said, I have to this meeting that I'm managing. So this year, obviously the biggest news right now in Sacramento is that, it's twofold. One, there was an election. And you all have been following that. And I know the city and surrounding area and the districts there, Santa Clarita, were, you know, in the middle of it for both the congressional and assembly seats that were up this year. And those look like they're still, they just called the congressional seat, which I'm sure Mr. Bowman will talk about. And then the assembly seat is still too close to call, although Assemblywoman Valadares, the incumbent, is leading, and that's you know where it is now, and we'll see as the final votes trickle in on how that plays out between the two going on there. So there's an election, and that's you know that's a takes a lot of the air out of the room here in Sacramento. A couple other things though, they had their organizing meetings, and that led to an interesting dynamic in the assembly and leadership on speaker. So it looks like they may have selected a new speaker coming June, but until then, Speaker Rendon will likely be, or at least the press release and the discussion was, he'll be elected on December 5th. And then on June 30th, they will transition the speakership to Robert Rivas from Salinas. And so that's at least the agreement. Has not been voted necessarily officially on yet, but that's where it is at this point. So a lot of political activity up in Sacramento. And then just the only other issue as I look at my notes is it looks as though if everything stays as the final votes come in, that the Senate will stay about the same, but the Assembly will, the Democrats will pick up two seats. One was in the Palm Springs area and the other one was on the Central Coast, up where I am in San Luis Obispo, up to Santa Cruz. That is a new seat, but it was held by Assemblymember Cunningham prior. So those are the two seat pickups, but everything else is essentially status quo. And, you know, the statewide ones were status quo. And I, you know, you've read all the things about the propositions, nothing specific to water. And so with that, that's probably enough about the elections report. And we'll definitely follow up and let folks know as it gets finalized and we get, you know, into next week when it really starts to get nailed down. Just from my perspective, and then I'll turn it over to Anthony and Anna Lee there. The other issue I do is I serve on the state legislative committee representing Santa Clarita. And so they've started to review legislative ideas and concepts. And we're going through that process right now. And in the report, we identified five ones that have been brought to the state legislative committee. They will continue to review those. We have another legislative committee in January, where I think those five will be further discussed, and they will probably have a few others. So there's ones that are still evolving and doing that. We keep staff and, you know, informed on that. We send the packet out, comes out, try to get feedback. And at this point, they're still conceptual, but you know, that discussion is ongoing. Like I said, the five options that they've talked about are in the report, and glad to, you know, go through there if there's questions. But again, it's still conceptual. Share the information, and then I'm glad to take any feedback or direction on that. But you have it there. With that, I will, you know, Anthony's kind of our budget guy, and I think he's on. I hope he is. So let Anthony talk about the budget. We have had some news on the budget over the last couple of days that there is a deficit, and maybe you can talk a little bit about that. So Anthony, go ahead.
Thank you, Dennis. Good evening, everybody. Good to see you all. I just want to give you a couple updates. One came from our previous report. I know we've gone over all the bills already, but there was a question regarding the budget, specifically in a space that related to $6.7 million over 4 years. For expedited large-scale habitat projects. And the question was, could that money be used for nonprofits or the Department of Parks and Recs? So I was able to make contact with the Assembly Budget Sub-3 consultant where that went through on natural resources and water. And the answer I received was, Anthony, those funds are dedicated to the Bay Delta Plan and the voluntary agreements. Those funds are going to be used by the Department of Fish and Wildlife for habitat restoration projects. And agreements that are being made on habitat and fish passage with water districts and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So that's where those $6.7 million over 4 years for expedited large habitat projects will be going to. So that is my first update. My second update, as Dennis mentioned, folks saw yesterday that the LAO released a preliminary budget overview of what the state's fiscal footing is going to look like next year. Given the fact that the state has put away several billions of dollars in reserves, they're not in panic mode yet, but they have said that the state is looking at a $25 billion deficit moving forward to start the year off next year. This does not account for inflation, is what was put out. So the state, in their bill signings last year, you'll notice that the governor's theme, as we mentioned prior, was that he wanted to restrain and be on good fiscal footing. So anything with ongoing funding last year that was bill related, he did not sign, he vetoed. So that really falls in line with the message that everybody is putting out. With that, we're going to continue to follow the budget. There will be a slow drumbeat over the month of December on some of the governor's priorities that he does plan to release. And if we do see numbers fluctuate from now to January, we'd be happy to report that in our next meeting. Anna Lee, I'm going to kick it to you if you have anything additional to share.
I don't have anything additional to share besides what Anthony and Dennis have already covered tonight, actually, but happy to answer any questions or do follow up if any members have any questions.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Before we give it to the directors, any questions from the public? Okay.
There's none.
All right, directors, questions, comments?
This is probably a stupid question. I apologize for it, but do the two extra Democrats make it a supermajority? Do we already?
Yeah, no, it's they're already a super. It's close to, yeah, super, so super majority.
Super duper.
It's, correct me if I'm wrong, Annalie. I think it's 60.
I knew it was up there.
It'll be 62-18. Is that correct? I mean, if everything stays the same, again, elections aren't finally done yet.
Yeah, that's what I show right now. But as Dennis said, there still are a few races that are too close to call. So, but it will be a supermajority.
Any questions, comments? Anthony, thank you for getting back regarding the use of those funds by Parks and Recs. Unfortunate, but curious. Regarding on page, the Carbon Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation on page 11, I believe the committee asked the question regarding the specific verbiage, where feasible. Have any of you had any luck trying to find out whether we could be, as a water provider, as a utility provider, exempt from this rule? Especially for our trucks.
Yeah, we've talked about, and that's an evolving regulation. And CARB is actually meeting today and tomorrow. And I think they had just an overview of that conversation because they're doing some, you know, other rules and regulations. And that's an ongoing, I guess, evolving discussion over what it's really what defines kind of an emergency vehicle, right? There's already an exemption for, you know, first responders, fire and police. And the desire, and we've actually brought it up at Aqua to, you know, build as broad of a coalition would be to add, you know, the work trucks to that provide the water for the fire truck. And that's, I think, how Steve explained it. Yeah. So that is an ongoing conversation. And it's really going to be political, you know, as they build the rule, can we get folks to agree to that? But it's not, you know, that's a, as the bill, as the rule gets implemented, well, developed and then implemented, that would be our position to advocate and bring a coalition to the table.
So like with anything else, federal, state, local, city, there's always a public comment available. Do the amount of public comments, do they have any weight on what CARB decides to do, or is this going to be driven by state senators and assembly representatives?
Well, you know, CARB's an interesting beast, and it's frankly, Anthony and I are laughing because we've been involved in a different rule that's there, like I said, in the committee today and tomorrow. The amount of comments are less important than the justification for the comments and there. And obviously some politics can come into play on any issue, but I think this is really one that we, you know, that build a coalition through Aqua and those folks. And then, you know, that everybody's having that same conversation. You have conversation with staff prior to, and that's really where the best place to win is with staff. Because once it's, you know, being voted on, it's like, whoa, why is this coming up now? So those conversations, usually, you know, you say number of comments, you know, the coalition could be geographically diverse. But when you're getting an exemption, sometimes you want it to be as narrow as possible, and you don't want to bring friends in the table. So, you know, you try to kind of define it, how we want to do that. So that would be my recommendation if Anthony has anything more, but to answer that question, but it's pretty much the, I would say the number one, two, and three priorities is the quality of your arguments. You bring data forward, and then what's the justification?
So the emphasis is on agency staff to present evidence to AQUA, and then AQUA bringing it to CARB, instead of just, you know, citizen ratepayers' public opinions, clogging up this public comment section that when it becomes available next year. Is that right?
That would be my strategic recommendation, yes, is that we don't have to just rely on AQUA purely. I don't mean that. But we, if it's a priority to our board, we get friends and through AQUA and other coalitions and maybe even, you know, some of the special districts or whatever, right? So you build a deal. We have meetings directly with staff and maybe with board members. That's second step, and do that. So that would be my recommendation.
Okay, understood. All right, before we let you go, again, any comments, questions from directors? Okay, Annalee, Anthony, Dennis, thank you for the report. Thank you for your oral report and your updates. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we move on to section 3.1, legislative presentations by VSA. Mr. Bowman, go ahead.
Thank you. It's good to see everybody tonight. So Congress is back in Washington, D.C. this week as they face a rather unsettled political environment with evolving election results and contentious leadership decisions. With Democrat wins in Nevada and Arizona, Democrats secured their control of the Senate with at least 50 seats. If Senator Warnock in Georgia wins his runoff, the Democrats will have 51 seats, giving them a majority on all the Senate committees. Republicans, on the other hand, will take back the majority in the House after securing their 218th seat yesterday. That gives them right now a 218, six races uncalled. All in the House will have significant implications, even though the majority is a lot slimmer than what was initially.
Hey, Jeff, I think we have a bad connection.
They try dropping your video.
Keep completely.
It's so funny when somebody just puts it like that.
Especially with a giant screen.
Yeah.
That was his Halloween
movie. Nothing you can do about it. You can rob your camera. Okay, well, let's give them a minute to.
Yeah, we could go with Mr. Baldy if you like.
Has he texted you or? But you know that he's trying to log back in. Trying to go with Mr. Bowman because he's in DC and the time difference. It's pretty late when he is.
You know, you're doing that check.
Okay, in that case, let's go with our local consultant report on Brawley, and then we'll come back to Jeff.
Maybe he doesn't know that he's frozen.
Oh, he would know.
A, you see yourself frozen.
Oh, this is true.
And B,
Mr. Jeff. He should be...
Is
eating your chips now because he can't hear you.
You know, I was just thinking about you.
But everybody else can because it's being recorded.
Great.
Mr. Brawley, are you ready to do that?
Is that us?
No, because our camel won't.
What?
Oh, thank
you.
You won't have to pull stuff.
I've been around for a while and people give me presents, and that's how I get the stuff.
Being, not a bad way of doing it, being along around for a long time.
Yeah.
Mr. Brawley, are you ready to present?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Hey.
All right, we'll move on to section
3.3.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Good evening. Just a couple of updates, and then obviously open to any questions. The tag on to what you heard from the California advocates, there are new election results every day now from LA County. I think the estimate is that there's still north of 400,000 ballots in LA County to count. Congressman Garcia, as was discussed, has been declared the winner in that seat. And as Jeff will probably tell you, there are three other seats that Republicans are leading in California. The Assemblywoman Valadares' margin has been shrinking slowly every report. I think she's down to about a 2,000 vote margin. Let me just double check that.
Oh, yeah,
Valadares.
Yeah, it is.
Her opponent could overtake her, although it is still a significant lead. I think the other takeaway from the election, which you probably are aware of, is that the vast majority in LA County and probably throughout the state, voters are voting not absentee. We don't use that word anymore, but by mail ballot that everybody receives. I think in LA County, it's up to about 75% to 77% of the ballots are that way. So that's the future of elections in California, and it won't change, obviously. As far as my report, I'm looking forward to our meeting on December 1st of the Safe Clean Water Program and have some updates on both the new program and hopefully some additional updates on programs we have approved. As far as the Board of Supervisors, and I do apologize from the last meeting, did correct after that the amount of money for the 22-23 Safe Clean Water Plan to be correct. The only really local action that was reportable is efforts by Supervisor Barger and the old senior center in Newhall to turn it into an arts and veterans center. That's been something they've been working on, and they were provided additional money for that. As with the city council, no meetings were held on Tuesday, November the 8th because of the elections. The city council meetings were rather tame. Santa Cruz Valley Committee of Aging, again, an annual contract they get from the city. Of some interest, at the October 25th meeting, there was a discussion by several speakers, including Sandra Cattell of the Sierra Club, about opening up some additional facilities that have been closed in Angeles National Forest. And then, as sometimes happens in development projects with the city, even though projects are going through their entitlement phase, environmental impact reports, citizens will come out and speak a public comment about those projects, even while the EIR is being prepared. And there were several speakers about the Cal Grove and Wiley Canyon project. And for those of you who want to remind yourselves, that's the old Mule Ranch off the Interstate 5. I think those are the highlights. Obviously, there'll be less meetings in December because of the holidays. And a reminder that one of the early issues for the city council will be discussing with the public will be the fact that city council is going to districts. They must adopt those districts, I believe, by June based on their settlement agreement. The plaintiff, one district has to be a voting rights district, but they also, the plaintiff has the right to agree to the other districts, and if they disagree, go to court. So, you know, the plaintiff's attorney will have a lot of say in that situation, but the public will also be involved and will have the ability to input. The three city council members, and I forgot to mention this, I apologize. Three city council incumbents were all reelected fairly handily. The fourth candidate, Denise Light, was a first-time candidate, raised a lot of money, but came up several thousand votes short of the third-place finisher, Marsha McLean. So the three incumbents were returned for 4 years, and even though there'll be districts that they will kind of be allocated to, they are still at large. They'll be at large for the next 4 years. So the two seats in 2 years will be the voting rights seat and one other seat. Councilman Gibbs is up, but whether it'll be a seat he lives in or not, we just don't know. That will be the public process. Obviously open for any questions anybody has.
I'm scanning any questions from the public.
There is none.
Questions from directors, comments? No? Thank you, Mr. Raleigh. One question, when can we expect the map?
New district map for the city?
Yes.
Council? I would hope sometime early next year. Again, they are still working with the plaintiff council. I know they have a demographer working on this. So I would expect January, maybe February, we'll have an idea of what those districts will be. Or the proposal, and then the public can comment on them.
Okay, understood. And one last question, the Parks and Rec Commission. I guess that's a question for you, Mr. Cole. Do we have any maps or any sort of list of new parks that are being proposed by the city? Not on our properties, but just in general and city limits. Is there such a map or a list?
I'm not sure, but I can check. Yeah. I don't know if you know a map.
I don't recall in this budget whether or not there were any new parks that were being developed by the city. They did build a new, and I'm not going to remember exactly how to describe it, but basically for people with special needs, they did a new park, but I think that was on an existing park site. There is a new potential park at the current Via Princesa commuter train station on that land. I mentioned that earlier in previous meetings where the city approved the contract for the design of that will have public input. That's the only new park that I know of, public park that's being proposed, but we can certainly double check and see if there's anything else.
Okay. I do have one request if I don't hear any objections from the committee. If you could find out, if the city outsources park maintenance to a specific company or if their own staff does the maintenance to their parks?
I will find that out. I do know that most of the work that is done for the landscape maintenance districts, which is, you know, in most cases is probably separate from the parks, are done by outside contractors that the city solicit bids on and then selects the contractor to do that. But I can see whether that applies to city parks themselves and get back to you.
Okay. Okay, that'd be great. Thank you. Director Bronstein.
I was going to say that that park idea, that the you brought up them having a new park. Is there a way that we can get in on it? And maybe, I mean, we're making a pocket park now, right? A park is being developed. Is there a way that we can get in there on the design, maybe do something, some kind of collaboration to make sure that it's, I don't know. I just feel like this is a good place to collaborate with the city, like have our design or our ideas, our inputs. It could be for a different type of garden or park or something, but somehow like.
Well, these guys are, you know, way ahead of us in terms of park design and construction. I mean, we're relatively new to the game here. Is that right, Mr. Cole?
Yeah, I think so. It's something we can reach out to. I know we've been, and we'll engage, we can engage in the process that Hunt's mentioning, right? So they'll go through a community engagement process for the park to ask the community, you know, what types of amenities are you, you know, we want, what are you looking for? So I think through that process, we can engage and talk about just, you know, how they're going to landscape the park itself. So there's the playing surfaces, and then there's kind of the peripheral
there. So clearly the hardscape, I'm not saying that we should take on or do anything like that, but I think that there's value for us being able to get on before the public then gets to have an input. Like, I think that that's important for us to have that kind of relationship.
And we've been working with them closely on the recharge aspect of the Vina Princesa Park. So this would be kind of an outgrowth of something like that.
Okay. So we're already engaged with them.
We are.
Okay. I will note that the various proposals that have come before the Safe Water Committee has had programs that are located in parks for the recharge. And so, and I believe a new one that's coming up is also proposed by this in the city for a park. So that seems to be where a lot of these projects are being proposed, because there's land that they believe can work on the recharge. So, and keep that in mind as well.
Thank you, Director Kelly.
Good evening, Hunt.
Good evening.
So my question is, have we heard the mitigation or what exactly is happening regarding the railroad tracks and either going under it or over it with regards to getting to the park?
You're talking about the new Via Princesa Park?
Correct. Because the answer is, access to the park has to go either over or under the railroad tracks.
That would all be part of the consultation and the design contract, which they've let. So if that's an issue and concern, that would all be part of that discussion.
President Martin.
Good evening, Hunt. Quick question on your report on the Safe Clean Water, the Measure W projects. You referred to the Via Princesa project delay on the discussion because it has not yet been scored. Who does the scoring on these projects?
There's a committee that is separate from these local advisory committees that does the scoring on any project from any of the WAS, and that committee just had not finished the scoring yet. There is an anticipation it will be a high score based on analysis that had been done by the city, but we won't have that information until December 1st.
Is that committee populated by county people, or are they... Measure W?
I can find out exactly what the composition is. I think it's technical people, probably primarily from the county, but I'll get that information and report it back.
And I will add that General Manager Stone sits on that committee. So
like I said, experts.
Yeah, I'm not certain how it gets selected, but I think it involved Catherine Barger's office on that selection piece, but. We'll do a little more research on how the full committee is sat.
Any other questions, comments? Okay, thank you, Hunt.
Thank you.
See you next month.
Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, Hunt. You too.
Okay, we're going to move on to section 3.1.
Did think Jeff's back.
I apologize for my connectivity issues. My 13-year-old IT department has gone to bed, so if it happens, just call in. Apologies. So at the risk of repeating myself, Congress was back in Washington, D.C. this week. They are still facing a rather unsettled political environment. They still have some evolving election results they have to contend with, as well as some leadership decisions. With Democrat wins in Nevada and Arizona, Democrats secured control of the Senate with at least 50 seats. If Senator Warnock wins his runoff in Georgia, Democrats will then have 51 seats, giving them a majority on all the Senate committees. Republicans, on the other hand, will take back the majority in the House after securing their 218th seat earlier this week. So that leaves them with a majority of 218 to 211. There's still six races uncalled. The change in control will have significant implications, even though the majority is much slimmer than initially anticipated. As the lame duck session starts, and I'll get to this in a minute, Congress still has several significant items on its agenda, particularly with FY 2023 appropriations and the Defense Authorization Act. We play in both of those. So in terms of the House and Senate leadership, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy defeated Congressman Andy Biggs from Arizona in a conference vote to determine the Republican nominee for Speaker. Congressman McCarthy will need to consolidate support in the House before they actually vote on the Speaker on January the 3rd. For Majority Leader, current Minority Whip Steve Scalise was selected unanimously, and Congressman Tom Emmer was selected as Majority Whip on the second ballot. For Minority Leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell has been selected by his colleagues after he beat back a challenge by Senator Rick Scott of Florida. In terms of the House Republican majority coming into January, due to several incomplete vote counts, it's unclear how large that majority will be. I'm guessing right now it'll be of the magnitude of probably 2 to maybe 5 seat margin. But that's kind of what it's been the last 2 years under Democrat control. So this is nothing new to us in Washington, D.C. The big news today was that Speaker Pelosi announced that she was not going to seek the honor to be the leader of the Democrat House members in January. She's going to still stay in the House and provide a bit of a transition role for the next Democrat leader. That was a pretty big signal that big changes were coming later in the day to House Democrat leadership. It's unclear what's going to happen sort of down ballot, but a couple things are for sure. Majority Leader Hoyer and Majority Whip Clyburn are stepping down from their leadership roles. It looks like Hakeem Jeffries from New York has the inside edge to take over as the Democrat leader. Catherine Clark of Massachusetts has mentioned that she wants to be the minority whip below Jeffries. And Pete Aguiar from California is going to seek the number 3 position, which is called the caucus chair. Jim Clyburn may try to stick around as the assistant leader. That's the number 4 slot. But that's just conjecture right now. None of that's been decided. And while Congressman McCarthy has the support of most of his conference, it's unclear if he'll get a majority of the House vote in January for Speaker. This is the part of the program where I always like to remind folks that you actually don't have to be a member of the House of Representatives to be the Speaker. So we'll probably get a better sense of what that leadership race looks like for the full House probably later in December after they wrap up the lame duck session. I won't go into too much detail about what the lame duck session looks like because it's relatively unchanged from our last report. Again, they've got 2 items unresolved, FY 2023, the appropriations process. We're feeling pretty optimistic that they're going to get a deal done by December the 16th when the current continuing resolution expires. Again, we've got a couple of projects that are in play in that process. And the second piece is the Defense Authorization Act. We care about that because the Water Resources Development Act is included in that. We've got a couple things going in that piece of legislation to help us work with the Corps of Engineers. And then my last piece for tonight is that, you know, we've spoken a lot about the designation of PFAS designation under Superfund or CERCLA. SAB Water did file comments on the proposed rulemaking on November the 7th. We're unsure when the draft rule will be published for comment, but we anticipate that sometime early next year. And to kind of increase visibility on this issue for SCV Water, we took the comments that you guys provided to the docket And we shared that with the congressional delegation, with the senators and Congressman Garcia, all of whom are coming back for the 118th Congress. So with that, I'll close and answer any questions you have. And again, I apologize for my technical difficulties tonight.
No worries, Jeff. Any questions from the public?
There's
none. Comments, questions from directors?
I heard a lot of rhetoric from Kevin McCarthy about how they're going to like cut funding for this and that. Are we going to be affected by that?
Well, I think it's always great to hear platitudes, but until the actual appropriations bills get pushed out, we won't really know, Director Plumbeck. I think, you know, some of the EPA water programs, the Bureau of Reclamation, the Army Corps of Engineers, those are very popular programs, and they've got support on both sides of the aisle. You know, you're also looking at significant influxes of funds from IIJA for the Bureau and for EPA. Those are over 5 years. And so the agencies actually have that money. So I think, you know, when they talk about cutting spending, you know, I don't think it's going to be, you know, an across the board haircut, so to speak. But I think, you know, the programs that we care about by and large are bipartisan. And so I think it'll be tough to cut those programs, I think.
Okay, that's good to hear. So probably they'll go after all the social programs. I don't know. I get worried anywhere from when I listen to Kevin McCarthy. So.
Any other questions, comments from directors? Jim, thanks again for looking into PFAS and for contacting EPA contacts regarding incineration issues and submitting our our feedback to that public forum. And it's definitely a concern. We definitely want that safe harbor policy for water agencies. And, you know, we're not the only ones. It's disheartening that that EPA would move in that way. I mean, it's kind of understandable. At the same time, it's not, because we're trying to get rid of it. And we're trying to do our due diligence and not only taking it out of our groundwater, but also sending it to a good vendor that can properly incinerate it. But thanks for checking with that. We really appreciate your efforts on that. Okay. Question is, so kind of piggybacking on Director Plumbeck's concern, I know that Representative James Comer of Kentucky and Jim Jordan of Ohio, they announced today that the House Republicans will be opening an investigation to determine the extent of President Joe Biden's involvement and his son's Hunter Biden business dealings. Based on your long history in D.C., whether or not there will be a tit for tat in the next year in the 118th Congress, will that have any impact on our issues here in Santa Clarita in terms of water? I mean, I know those Bureau of Reclamations and EPA are popular programs, but will they be pushed aside for political reasons and so forth?
No, and here's why, my opinion. So the Water Resources Development Act has now become, it's not must pass, but it's really close. They're getting ready to go five straight Congresses with five straight wordas. I don't remember, at least in my lifetime, that hasn't happened. And I'm kind of a legislative historian. So that bill is incredibly popular. And that that authorizes activities and programs and projects at the Army Corps of Engineers. So you've got a bill that you really care about. It's focused on water. They're going to do another bill in 2024 because there just continues. Everybody needs this. I made a comment yesterday to somebody who didn't quite appreciate the importance of water. And I said, well, I tell you what. I said, you can go a couple of weeks without power, but tell me how you're doing a couple of days without water. And my second, the second sort of must-pass piece of legislation is that Washington, D.C. doesn't meet the deadline. You've heard me give that awful statistic that the last time Congress got all 12 appropriations bills done on time was in 1996. But they will always move a funding package at some point to fund EPA, the Bureau, the Corps of Engineers, USDA, and other agencies that folks like SCV Water rely on. And so as long as you've got water bills that continue to pass, as long as Congress recognizes that they have to continue to fund the government and programs that are essential to health and safety for the American public, you know, there will be those investigations, but they will have very little bearing on the pieces of legislation and the other activities that impact SCV Water. You know, I think that just in closing, we saw what IIJA, how that came about. That was a bipartisan bill. That had Democrats and Republicans in the Senate working together. And so I think over the next couple of years, there will be opportunities like that where maybe it'll be smaller than IIJA, but I think there'll be bipartisan cooperation on some things. And I just, you know, the other piece that gets the media attention, the investigations, things like that, maybe that's a necessary distraction that we need to take care of the business, like the appropriations and the word of bills.
Okay. Understood. So regardless of what's happening on that front, legislation that's needed to be passed, those agencies that are overseeing those things, that work will still be going on.
Yep.
Without any issues. Okay.
Those are, you know, the Interior EPA bill, which funds Environmental Protection Agency, and the Energy and Water bill, which funds the Bureau and the Corps of Engineers. Those are incredibly popular pieces of legislation on both sides of the aisle.
Okay.
They argue about some of the details, but they're always the bills that seem to go first, which means they're easier, less difficult to pass.
Okay. So I know that BOR and then some sections of EPA will focus on water. Regarding on page 4, the environmental and climate justice block grants, you've listed several money in your report. Mr. Cole, who at SCB, water agencies is looking into seeing if we can use some of these grants for our existing projects and projects budgeted for next year? Is it just Cheryl Fowler, or are we working with Jeff and seeing which one can be applied?
Yeah, I mean, it's generally a team approach. So a lot of the time what Jeff does is he throws these things over the fence to us, and then Cheryl will take them and research them to see if we have any of our projects that fit that mold.
Match that criteria.
And then eventually, if we think that is the case, then we'll engage a grant writing consultant, and then we go down the path of trying to apply for grants.
Okay, understood. And
I would just add that was an extrapolation of a question that we got asked. I believe it was President Martin asked me that question. So it is an iterative process on the environmental justice piece at the EPA at the moment. These are programs that were funded under the Inflation Reduction Act. And so unlike IIJA, which funded existing programs, IRA created new programs and then also funded them. So this is going to be a months long process before we actually see notices of funding opportunity.
Okay. Not sure if it's appropriate to bring that at this point, but you know, there's several, you know, the language being created by this, you know, by this new agency, OEJECR, is using communities of color, impact communities, and I was wondering if there's a specific definition for these communities that can be applied here for in Santa Clarita. As you know, we're a city of Santa Clarita, but we have different kind of boroughs like Saugus or Valencia. We also have communities that live in tract homes or what do you call them? Manufactured homes, which are communities in themselves that might have some water infrastructure that either might be aged or might need to be updated. Would they qualify would the ABC qualify to receive those grants to improve the infrastructure in those particular parts of the city?
The short answer is I don't know. Again, because these are new programs and every federal agency seems to have a different definition in terms of what a disadvantaged community is or what an unserved community is or what an underserved community is, I think this is going to take place. You know, I mentioned that the NOFOs will take months to get pushed out, and that's because they have to develop the criteria and the eligibility criteria for these disadvantaged, unserved, underserved communities. And so, you know, I think there will likely be for some of these, for a lot of these EPA programs, they will probably put out, they will probably publish an informal guidance or a proposed guidance and ask for public comment. And I think a lot of folks will then have the opportunity to better help the agency define a disadvantaged community. And so as they roll out this guidance, we may want to think about sort of offering Santa Clarita Valley Water's perspective in terms of what the disadvantaged or unserved or underserved communities are in your service area.
Okay, understood. I mean, my emphasis on, let's compare the water agency in Flint, Michigan versus the water agency in Santa Clarita. You know, it's night and day. But then again, we do have some pockets of communities that might fall into those definitions that are right now not very certain. And we can utilize those grants to, you know, update valves, I don't know, infrastructure, things like that. Okay, just food for thought. Any other comments or questions from directors? President Martin.
Hi, Jeff. Good to see you. Hope you're well.
You too, sir.
Question on this Office of Water and how it might impact your work on our behalf. Is this going to focus more of EPA's resources that would simplify our efforts to get support, or is this going to be just another level of red tape that we go through?
I think the goal is not red tape, but I think more funding on the streets to help these communities. I don't think that, you know, but just because it's the intent doesn't mean that it ends up being with more red tape. So I'm somewhat, because there is money that is attached to this through IRA, I'm somewhat hopeful that it's not really a regulatory mission. It's an outcome-based mission. So I know hope is not a plan, but you know, I think I remain a little optimistic on this one, that I think it's not a regulatory mission here.
Well, that's good to hear. Thanks, Joe. Just curious.
Okay. Questions, comments from directors? Seeing none. Jeff, thanks again for a report and for being here with us. And we'll see you here next month.
Thank you.
Your IT problem.
By the way, are you paying your IT department their prevailing wage on the work?
I don't know what I'm paying her, but apparently it's not enough.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, good.
Thank you. You too.
Happy holidays.
Bye, Deb. Right. We're going to move to item number 4, discussion on Jerry Gladbach Scholarship, presented by Kathy Martin.
Yes, thank you so much. Appreciate all the feedback and ideas we had at the last meeting. So I've just come back to you with a follow-up proposal that addresses some of the concerns that were expressed and brings in the information about the AQUA sponsorship or AQUA scholarship. So as the report mentions, AQUA has this established scholarship program. I met with their staff a couple weeks ago to talk about how we could fold into it and timing-wise. And right now, if we are able to act tonight and it's on schedule for the board on December 6th, we could still get into this round of their scholarship program. With that in mind, my recommendation is if we do want to try this out, is to just follow the guidelines and application procedure that they have. They have a solid list of requirements and guidelines for people to apply, and they have one portal. So everybody would apply. We would earn the advantage of their network of schools that they already communicate with to be considered for our scholarship as well. And we could sit on the selection committee too, so we can review all of the applications, see if there's one that seems a better fit than some others. It is possible that I'd suggest this for a second round, but we could probably still make this work, is if we wanted to distinguish our scholarship in some way. It's like BB&K had the scholarship last time that was based on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so they had a separate essay question that was asked. They actually only got one or two applications for that because it required that extra step as opposed to the other ones that are all selected from the same applicant pool. So if there was some reason that we thought a special question would benefit us in honoring Director Blaback's legacy, I think we could do that. Although, like I said, I would suggest we try this one first and we can look into that. Funding-wise, I know there's a question about the cost. We do have an informal commitment to sponsor the scholarship rather than it actually coming from SCD Water funds. So if that was a concern, we do have other options for paying Aqua to issue that scholarship. So I'll just put up just a couple of things quickly. Now, one of the concerns was about how funds are dispersed. So with Aqua, they disperse it straight to the school's financial aid office, and it is used to cover their tuition and their books as those costs incur. And if they don't continue to fulfill the requirements of the scholarship, it's forfeited. I think that was the main one. So just on the Aqua, if we act now and we act on December 6th, and we can get in the queue, get our information on their website, and they are going to start advertising for applicants second or third week of December. Then I also just brought back the College of Canyons one of the questions there. I know Director Planbeck had some concern again about just accountability. It is a small amount, and I still wouldn't recommend that we try to do anything on a reimbursement basis, but one thing that we could do is adapt about these eligibility and requirements for a scholarship where we can say that to be eligible, you have to have successfully completed one class in the water technology department and that you have letters of recommendation so that we know it's not somebody that just on a whim decided, I think I'll check out water math. It looks like an easy class and we don't hear from them again. So that would just give us a little bit more assurance that it's somebody that is committed to the study of the field of water. And that concludes my report. I tried to summarize in this recommendation the specific things to help us focus on if there was any pieces of that that we still want to discuss or change by consensus tonight. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Kane, do we have any questions from the public?
There's
questions from the public? Nope. All right. Questions, directors? Director Kelly.
Kathy, I appreciate your indulging me on the Aqua situation. I think the research has come out really good. It looks like the proposal for the recommendation is $3,000, $2,500 Aqua, and $250 to COC, so a total of $3,000. But I did have a couple questions on page 71. It states the applicant must be California resident at the time of application. So my concern is if they move out of state, does that scholarship follow them out of state? And it seems like one of our primary purposes is to get water individuals secured in the state of California to work on projects with any water agency. And it's not confined to just being Santa Cruz Water, obviously. And then the second, I don't know if you want to answer that or you want me to do
it. Let me address that really quickly. It does say that, but it also says they have to be attending an accredited California college or university. So that would.
I saw that in the second one, must be attending. But it also says at the start of the academic year. So once again, it still addresses, doesn't address the fact that they may turn around and transfer to the University of Arizona, you know, to continue their education. So how does that benefit us in California?
I'll check with Aqua on that, but to confirm, but my understanding of it is then they would no longer be eligible. The funding wouldn't follow them because Aqua's relationship is with those colleges and universities in California. Their financial aid office. So if a student lives here and registered at CSUN, and we start that process and we give the money to that school as the student spends it, if they left that school, it would be, if they left it for a non-state school, it wouldn't follow them.
So we pay out the money progressively, not all up front.
We give it out to Aqua and then they work with the financial aid offices. Okay.
I am
you don't mind the extra burden? I'm sorry, I just popped into my head.
What was your question?
Aqua doesn't mind the extra burden? No.
They already have two programs now, yeah. So just add a third one. So.
Yeah, and they actually have three. They have two undergrad and one grad, plus the BBK one now, which they fully administered, so they said it wasn't.
I think on page 73, I think that's more of less concern to me now. And under agency administered recommendation, I give a check in full at the beginning of this. You know, they basically get the money, but at $250, there's not a lot of risk.
Right.
So, okay.
Any other questions, comments?
Yes. Thank you.
Director Feinberg?
I'm sorry, I interrupted him when we got money in.
I forgive you.
The letters of recommendation. So it says that needs to be one from a faculty member and one from a previous or current employer. And I was wondering if they could be substituted. Let's say it's a high schooler that's doing these classes, you know, hasn't been employed. Can you get two letters from teachers instead of?
Yes, that's a good question. I think I copied this over, but I think it actually says, you know, suggested having one from each and like the employer within the last 5 years. But I do think there is a
link. You can always volunteer locally and get nonprofits to write them stuff.
That's a good
point. Excuse me, did Lynn just interrupt you again?
And then just to throw another wrench out there, I like the idea of the scholarships, but I also like them being more local and benefiting Santa Claritians and things like that a little bit more than Aqua and somebody somewhere in the water business. What if we had something that was like to encourage from local schools to apply to a water something, and we would give them then a scholarship to apply to go wherever they want to go for the water stuff. But it would be a local student that we would be giving the money to.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. So what do you mean is high school student in Santa Clarita interested in water? I believe COC is open to high school students taking college classes,
right,
taking a water class, and we're paying for it.
But what if, they want to go, I'm sure they're, water engineering or something like that, and actually go to, a university somewhere, learning. Well,
there's no water engineering. It's civil engineering with an emphasis of open channel. Or it's not that specific.
Okay. I know there's more school districts here than the way I've worked it with in the past, but I can check with their scholarship offices. I know you can make a scholarship available, and high school seniors at any high school can apply through that process. And like ours would just say, we're looking for students that are planning on going into these fields. So water is obviously a focus, but there is engineering in general, the sustainability, there's a lot of green careers, communication. So maybe a wider list that we could do that was for local high school students, but not. I can research that.
So we sponsor like a summer program, summer semester at COC? Is that the thought?
Well, it wouldn't have to be a local school, right? Just a local student going into that field.
Yeah, a local student. Yeah.
Well, most of these students that are taking it in high school are transferring to, are taking the extracurricular classes at COC anyway. So does that have the ability to transition the 250 to combination of either high school or college, whichever we want?
Awesome.
And then that would meet one of our goals.
Yeah, because I mean, I just feel strongly about benefiting our local, you know, and them thinking fondly of us and then wanting to come work here one day and, you know.
So a couple thoughts. I think that that is a great additional element to this. My suggestion would be if we like these to move forward to them and we can further research an additional scholarship option. We also do have the internship program that's coming forward, and there might be other school age, high school age related opportunities for, you know, like Palmdale Water just did their youth water ambassador or something or other where they took them through a program. I think there's a lot of options there.
All right. Maybe we're getting off topic here. Yeah. I mean, this is in honor of Jerry Gladbach. So the way I see it is, well, first of all, I have a question. Internship. It's being it's taken off PRL and given to Finance and Administration Committee. So is it my understanding that that committee is considering naming the internship a project as Jerry Gladbeck's internship with SCD Water? Is that moving forward?
Yes. Is it already at the FNA committee or it's coming
to
the next one?
It's going to be on Monday.
Yeah, it's going to be at the FNA committee Monday and then it's scheduled to come to the board, I think, in December. So it's already.
Okay.
There's a agenda posted for FNA that has the report on it. And it does have Director Gladbeck's name attached.
And are there any other choices or is that the recommendation of the staff to move with that branding? Are there any options being presented by Finance Administration Committee?
No, not right now. I mean, I think the other option is to not brand it.
Okay.
It's just an internship program of the agency.
I mean, I personally, the directors, I'm a firm believer in internships. I've received some grants and scholarships, couldn't name you the name, or I even don't remember what I wrote in the essay. But the internship, every single one I remember. And every single one gave me one piece of knowledge that I will never forget. Big advocate for that. Regarding this scholarship, going through ACWA, I've dealt with scholarships before through big organizations, one being Society of Naval Architects and Marine Engineers. And there are more than one scholarships and memoriam of, you know, very influential naval architect in the U.S. And those are really visible. And there's a picture of that individual, biography of that individual, and it's named after that person in perpetuity, as long as the society exists. So I do see a benefit here going to ACWA because they'll administer it and it'll be called in Jerry Gladbeck's name, which is a huge thing. COC, it seems like it's going to be a burden on our staff. And it might be, you know, it might favor people that are good with writing essays, as opposed to, let's say, engineers or technicians who, you know, may not have that kind of skill set, so they might not apply. But again, we might be opening up to communications, to accounting, things like that. So that's a possibility there. Before I say anything, that's my thoughts right now. Dr. Kelly, you want to say something?
Yeah, I recommended ACWA because as Jerry says, we're all Jerry's kids. And Aqua was his house. And I think that's an important way to recognize him. Second thing is, I feel that the Aqua scholarships have gone to recipients from San Francisco to Orange County to other locations, and there's absolutely no reason why somebody from Santa Cruz can't apply and also be a deserving recipient. So it's something that maybe we can support Aqua on by getting out the information to our local individuals to see about applying for that. And so what I'd like to do is recommend that we take to the board on December 6th the recommendation for the $2,500 to Aqua and table the COC for future discussion based on what Director Bronstein and Kathy Martin are looking at, see how we can tighten that up a little bit more to keep things local and benefit some of the people locally. So my recommendation, because of the time frame, would be to move forward with $2,500 for Aqua, and let's get it to the board, hopefully get it approved so we can do that recognition for them that the Aqua comes in April or May, whatever it is.
Okay. Other President Mark?
Yeah, I support Director Kelly's recommendation. We all know Jerry's legacy is statewide, if not national. Certainly, Aqua is such a huge part of his life and his profession and his career. I really would like to, actually, I want to see us move forward on both, but I understand tabling the COC one for further consideration, but I definitely would support moving ahead with the Aqua scholarship. I think it's probably less work on staff. You're following their process and procedure, and it gets Jerry's name out there to be recognized on an annual basis, which is what we really wanted to do. And so I would support Director Kelly's proposal.
Rossi?
So about your concern about the writing, I think that you'll see different types of candidates based off of the letters of recommendation. You know, having a lot of different types of kids. I know I have kids that are writers that they can write. I mean, also 300 words. So let's keep that also, like, that's not that long. But I know I have different types of kids that will shine doing different things. So I think having the letter of recommendations and having the essay will kind of balance it out. You know, people that are really good with their hands or have a different type of mind will actually thrive a lot of times under jobs or in a different way. So I don't think that that's something that's that worrisome. My other question was, is this something that we're planning on doing in perpetuity? Like, from now on, this is going to be part of our budget, the $2,500?
Yes, it would come forward as part of the budget each year, and the committee can decide each time whether you want to continue or change it. Or just...
Yeah, I would think our goal would be, or at least my goal would be, to have it continue, in depth.
Well, I personally would like to see both of them go forward. I think that if we're offering $250 scholarships or financial aid, as we said, it's not a big risk. I think it would be a good way for us to test the water to see how it works and then go from there. And that way we can see, oh, has this really been very draining on our staff and time consuming? Then maybe it's not a good idea and we drop it. Or maybe it's like, wow, look at all these amazing applicants. I wish we could, do more kind of thing. I think that.
Well, on the, if I can speak, on the COC, I've always been the representative that's gone over there to meet with the recipient and to be introduced as CLWA or Santa Cruz Water and scholarship. And so they did all the selection. They did everything in the past. And then we just basically were there to support whoever that recipient was. And I don't have a problem doing it, doing both of them also. I just got the feeling that the time frame for ACA is December 6th. The time frame for COC, although it doesn't really say, I'm assuming sometime in January, February.
January.
So we would still have time to approve that separately, or we can do them both at the same time. But I was really looking at focusing on the time frame for the ACA commitment.
Okay.
Okay, are there any objections with moving forward with option one, ACWA? Okay, so we can bring that to the board. Option one, would we want to see maybe more discussions?
May I address some of the concerns? I think we may be able to get there tonight. If you notice, I didn't suggest to call that one the Jerry Glab X Scholarship. That's just the SCD Water Scholarship for water technology students. So what would be distinguished from what Director Bronstein is talking about is this is specifically for an existing pool of students already at COC, already studying water technology. A lot of our staff serves as the faculty there. We've written all of the books there. We're on the Water Technology Advisory Committee. So this would just be showing another way that we're supporting students in the program and letting them know, hey, there's an employer right here in Santa Clarita. That would, you know, wants to support you as you start this career, advance yourself in this career, and maybe you'll end up with us. So it would be really simple. It would not be the process you're talking about. We would actually review and select, and we would bring the winner to our board instead of us being part of the mass of presentation. So we would select and we would present it at the board and get to meet them, and they would know exactly where a little bit of my name is coming from. So I think it's a good idea. I mean, that's just gives us that local touch to start, but then we can further look at other ways to look at a local high school scholarship.
And you have the resources, the time, the staff to do that.
Yeah. We already actually have application developed because we were looking at this like 3 years ago and just never got to pull the trigger. So it's ready.
And then in July, we'll have to start the Kathy Martin Public Relations Scholarship Fund.
All right. So let's...
will we end with both of them then?
I guess so, unless there's any objections here.
Okay. No objection for me. Okay, then we'll swing this over to the board for December 6th and be ready to roll December 7th.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you all very much for the conversation.
Good discussion.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on to item five, communications manager activities. Presented by Kathy Martin. Let's start with section 5.1, social media quarterly report. Ms. Martin?
Yes. I am going to make these next few as a group.
Sure.
That would be okay. We're actually talking a little bit about massaging our agenda a little bit to make this a smoother process and coming out for this part of the report. So the only thing that really has anything new that I did want to point out is quarterly we offer a social media report. So that quarterly report is in here. It starts on page 77 or 81 of the PDF if you're looking on a computer. And it just shows our activity August through October. We've got minor growth in followers. That's still a real tough nut to crack. Social media algorithms are crazy. But then we just show a few of our highlights. It continues to be that if we have a smiling employee face, that gets the most engagement of pretty much anything else we do. So you can see on the third page of that report, we shared, bragged about our EPA Water Sense Excellence Award and had our conservation staff featured. And lots of engagement on that. People congratulating them and appreciating the work that they do. So we have our top posts for each one. On the next page, page 4 of the report, you see that purple chart that has impressions. I just wanted to point out that there's a kind of a peak around September 14th. So I went to look it up, like what happened September 14th. That had a couple of things that were just particularly popular. We posted a photo of a school bus and school kids It was the first class that was returning in person to our on-site education program. And so there was a lot of excitement around that. But also around that time, we launched the top 100 SCV-friendly plant guide. And that has gotten a lot of interest and appreciation from our customers. So those two things.
That online, both of them.
Did you?
Facebook pages, yeah.
So both of those. Was good. Both of those things in that time period, and they both have a lot of engagement, so it gives us that little boost. And then also bottom page 4, we have a LinkedIn page that we post, you know, when we open a project or a few things here and there, but we've started doing a lot more on the LinkedIn page, and that's being reflected in the engagement we get there and the number of people following the agency page. So I just want to give you an example of a post there when we were introducing one of our new employees. And that is it. Everything else is pretty status quo. Nothing to update on the legislative reports. If we have any questions about anything else on there, happy to answer. I did want to mention you all should have received an email for the holiday party on December 15th. If anybody wanted to just give me your RSVP rather than we'd be fine by email.
Can I just do that?
Yes.
Now, I sent you a question about it because it says it's an all staff party. Is that what you're talking about or is it? I didn't understand if it was for us too.
Oh, yeah. Just keep with the format. Let's say the questions until Spartan is finished.
Oh, okay. Because she asked if we were RSVPing. That's what.
Yeah. As we end the meeting, I'll give you an opportunity to let me know if you're RSVPing. Yes, it is all employees and directors. Everybody that received the invitation.
Okay, I'll be there. She said she asked.
It's her fault.
That's
her
sorry.
Sure.
And. Last thing, last night we had our lawn replacement program webinar. We're starting a series called Water Matters that we'll do quarterly, and last night was the first one. We had over 160 that registered for it, and we had over 60 that showed up for it live.
Nice.
Yeah, so those were just really great responses to that. We're excited about that. The conservation staff is probably going to receive a flurry of new lawn replacement applications. But it was a great format and one that we are going to continue to use on some other topics. And that concludes my report.
All right. Any public questions? Comments?
There's none.
None? All right, directors. Does it, Martin?
I'm going.
You get to talk too, finally, to the whole group in person.
Actually, can I ask a question about your quarterly report? I had something before you jumped into the holiday party. I'm happy to have the holiday party, by the way, but I'm just curious, you know, the numbers don't mean a lot to me on their face because I can't really relate that well to just numbers, but are you pleased with the progress of the social media program when you show the plus 1.7, the plus 3.75, the plus 2.5? I mean, are you the expert or the department the expert on this? Are you happy with the growth of the social media program?
It's slow, but it is steady. And every once in a while, we'll do an extra like followers campaign that will give us a little bit more of a boost. To get us to that next level, we need to be able to use the stories and the reels and more of the short form video stuff. And that's just been difficult to capture right now with other projects that we're working on. But it is something that we are working towards.
It involves a lot of the staff on your social media postings. Are they pleased? Is staff generally pleased with this getting that kind of exposure?
Yes, it's primarily Laura Gallegos, our public affairs specialist, who is primarily responsible. And we do have a consultant that we pay that manages a lot of the posting. Like they do quite a bit of it. They monitor the traffic and then Laura supplements that and she manages that consultant, which makes it more.
Well, it helps doable. With that problem that nobody knows what we do.
Yeah. We schedule out the topics a month in advance. It goes through a review process. And then when we have things that just pop up, we plug those in as we can.
Thanks,
Kevin. It's a difficult situation. Yeah, you see some agencies that just go viral with something that's really clever. Or I get, I watch what the city of Santa Clarita does. And they've got all kinds of cool stuff. And they're on TikTok. And they've got their librarians dancing. And I sometimes feel like inadequate. And then I remember that they have a 10-person communication staff. And I feel okay. I think we do a lot with our three.
Yeah, Ms. Martin, my support of all of this is, public outreach is great. And getting that viral video, it's every communications manager's dream.
Yeah.
I use this as evidence. There's been these two instances that I know. A local paper saw a particular project being done by the water agency. And they accused the water agency of doing something improper. Or maybe not knowing that they're accepting this water that's been contaminated. I think that was the article I was referencing a while back. And what saved them was the media posts saying, hey, we're getting this contaminated water because we need it, but we have the facility to treat it. And so another newspaper, another TV channel saw that and reported on that newspaper's faulty reporting. So I definitely put as much content as possible in terms of what we do, because it's it could be traced back, it could be looked back as evidence of what we do, and confirmation that we know what we're doing. So that's the way I look at it.
I appreciate hearing that. And we do try to use this to be transparent. So it's not just only fluff stuff. Like we don't shy away from saying that we have this issue or that issue that we're addressing.
Okay.
That's good to hear.
All right. And before I continue with my comments and questions, any other questions, comments from directors?
Director Bonsky. You can ask all of your questions. No, maybe they're the same that I have.
Let's be respectful.
So I was wondering if you think that the Instagram is up higher because it's mostly pictures kind of situation?
That it's up higher in terms of
the gaining that we got. It's 3.75 versus 1.7. Do you think it has to do with the fact that it's just more visual?
And we post pretty much the same content on each. So our Facebook has the same photo as Instagram. But
Instagram is also younger people. Too.
Yes, so but also if you look at our Instagram followers, a lot of them are just other water industry entities. Like we follow Orange County Water and they follow us. So truthfully, if you look at our followers, a lot of them are it's sort of like this incestuous sort of thing going on.
So I mean, again, just to echo Director Rosachowski, this is great. This is transparency at its best. So I love seeing this. I recognize all these posts because I liked and shared them myself. Do you think that sharing them helps with visibility and awesome? Because every time I see it and I don't, I feel really guilty about it. But I'm like, opportunity.
We encourage that.
And then do you think that the lawn replacement webinar, do you think that got a lot of feedback because of the topic or because of the day of? Like it was in the middle of the week. It's like a Wednesday, right? It was yesterday.
I think it's both. When we did our drought webinar earlier this year, it was similar. It was a weekday evening and had similar response, I think, maybe a little less. So I think both. I do think that that's a good time for that kind of a project.
And then another question of mine were, if these peaks correspond, like, do you analyze what the peaks correspond with? Like, what was going on that day? What was posted that day?
Yes, we'll see. You know, we get in here a lot more often than quarterly, and we'll see.
Clearly.
But when we...
I hope so.
But I do this. Like, when I see this thing, I'll go back just to see, like, what was so exciting on that particular day. Sometimes it's because we boosted a post and put some money behind it.
Okay.
Sometimes a lot of our posts, like, the city just shared one of ours on something, I forget what it was.
I think it was a lawn replacement.
Might have been a lawn replacement.
I've seen the lawn replacement go around a lot. And I've seen also the the plants.
Yeah, the plant. So the city and Green Santa Clarita and some others locally will share our stuff, and that will give us a boost.
Okay. I do have a comment on page 87, item 5.4. I did see a booth at the Touch It Book. It was hosted by SCV Education Foundation. Two booths from SCV Water. The bubble making was popular with the kids. Once you bring the kids in, you can start speaking to the parents, thinking about conservation and what do we do here, the weight. And I believe Marcel was running the water fountain station. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So he brought up an important point that there's a lot of pressure there. So if you guys, if we could install a pressure regulator to kind of decrease the amount of water coming out of the faucets, I think that's an easy fix. And I was wondering if we can also install a flow meter. And then at the end of the day, we know how much water we dispensed and then divided by a typical water bottle. And we can show to the public and to any particular grant that we're writing how much plastic we prevented from going out.
I love that. Not that advanced. Great ideas.
Right, and thanks again for Marcel for being there and doing that. Okay. Any other questions, comments from directors?
Keep up the good work.
All right. We'll be at the library at New Hall on December 3rd for our next event. We'll have the station out there too.
Okay. What sort of a kids' activity you have this time?
I don't remember. Casey's got it planned.
Okay. Oh, one more thing. I believe you mentioned two meetings ago you're working on billboards. Is that still a go with the agency or no?
We had a meeting with our contact that has them, and there's not a great location available right now that would get us much return on that.
Okay. All right. Just curious. Right. With that, we move to item 6, adjournment, and the meeting's adjourned. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today.
Good job. Thank you.
Thank you, staff.